This is ESPN Radio.
It is ESPN Radio. You got your boys in this morning when it comes to Jay Williams over there. Freddie Coleman over here, also on ESPNU. Sirius XM Channel 80 in the ESPN app presented by Progressive Insurance. If you haven't heard about the Northwestern football situation, let's just say the allegations and ugliness is not even the major, major part of that story. It goes a lot deeper than that. And a man has been all over the Northwestern story is Adam Rittenberg, ESPN college football reporter. Great stuff by him all the time regarding this. Hit him on Twitter at ESPN Rittenberg. He joins us now here on ESPN Radio. And Adam, what has it been like seeing this story go from one point on Friday where it seemed that they commissioned the investigation and Pat Fitzgerald was supposed to be suspended 2 weeks without pay as football coach at Northwestern, to Monday, where he was fired and more allegations and ugliness surfaced around Northwestern football?
Yeah, it's been wild, Freddie. Just that leap from essentially a symbolic suspension. This is one of the lightest times of the year. Coaches are on vacation. There's no recruiting that's going on. The team is working out, but there's no on-field practices right now, to the dismissal of the winningest coach in team history, the most iconic former player in modern Northwestern history in 72 hours is certainly stunning. And the important thing is, yes, there were some additional things that came out, but the bulk of the information did not change at all from Friday when they concluded that investigation, came out with the summary of it, no real details, but they had all of the details that were reported at the Daily Northwestern on Saturday in my reporting over the weekend as well, and talking to that whistleblower, the former player, whose allegations came to light. So this information was known. It was just the details of it, the reaction. I do think the university president speaking to the whistleblower and his family is an important part of this, because then it becomes more personal. And as more stories were coming out, this is a university that doesn't like to be embarrassed, that cares probably much more about its academic reputation than Pat Fitzgerald or anything on the football field. It reached a point where, as the president said in his letter, he no longer felt Pat Fitzgerald could oversee a healthy culture, a culture that seemed among the healthiest in college football. He in the mind of the Northwestern president, said that culture, at least partially, has been broken by the hazing incidents that went on in the program.
Hey, Adam, when you said that this stuff was known, for how long was it known?
It was known from the very beginning. So yesterday I received the email correspondence that the whistleblower, the former player, sent to Northwestern's compliance director back on November 30th. Did it have every single detail that the Daily reported and I reported over the weekend and others? No, but it had a lot of details and it had some tough language in there. It talked about the running, the hazing practice where older classmen would hold down a younger player most of the time who had made a mistake, and engage in sexualized behavior, horrible behavior. That was in the initial correspondence. And the former player told me he revealed all of this to the investigator, all of the incidents, everything that he knew. He very much wanted to get this out there. And so when they reached their decision on Friday to suspend Fitz for 2 weeks without pay in the middle of July, essentially, they had all of this. They did not release it publicly. We learned last night that 11 players had mentioned hazing or had corroborated some degree of hazing, but the investigator did not find evidence that Pat Fitzgerald knew about it, nor did his staff. But as far as the core information, the most important things, that was all known to University President Michael Schill when he made his initial decision.
ESPN college football reporter Adam Rittenberg joining us here on ESPN Radio, the morning show. Adam, how much accountability is there on the shoulders of the president, Michael Schill?
All of it, yeah, Jay. He said in the letter last night that this was his decision and his decision alone. Now, obviously, he talked with the board of trustees. He talked with others around the school. Although I from sources have told me, there wasn't a whole lot of communication with some of the more influential people at Northwestern. Mm-hmm. And so the president, who's, again, relatively new on this job, came over from Oregon. This is a huge moment for him, and something that, as he acknowledged in his letter, it's a decision he knows won't sit well with some people. It will sit well with others, but it's a controversial move 3 days after announcing a relatively minor punishment for the head coach and someone who's been there 17 years, the winningest coach in team history. And so, you know, and then the other thing that I should point out in corresponding with some players in the team meeting last night, Michael Schill was not there. Wow. Now, the athletic director also wasn't there. He's been traveling. He zoomed in briefly to speak to the players, and they're very upset at the lack of presence from the leaders on campus. One player telling me that it's just outright cowardly that neither of them were there, but especially Schill, because it's his decision. And these players are left to try to prepare for a season. You know, they heard from Pat Fitzgerald briefly, but they're essentially on their own. There's no one really there to explain the details of what evolved between Friday and Monday.
So, Adam, let me just make sure I have this correct. Because, you know, as a former NBA player, I really thought one of the defining moments of Adam Silver's career was how he handled the Donald Sterling situation to kick off his legacy as a commissioner. And I think also for President Michael Schill, even though you're fairly new on the job, like, this is a defining moment in the legacy of your career as a president of Northwestern, right? An academically incredible university. You're telling me that he hasn't been around. You're telling me that he had the information earlier by November 30th and then finally passed the 2-week suspension. And it wasn't until you started reporting this and also their school newspaper started reporting this that it's ultimately led to the coach Fitzgerald finally losing his job. I just want to make sure I have all that correct. Is that correct?
That's all correct. Now, again, I don't know if Michael Schill received every single detail in the investigation but prior to announcing the suspension. I don't know the direct correspondence between President Schill and Maggie Hickey, the attorney who led the investigation, but I can tell you that Maggie Hickey had this information. So maybe there was a communication breakdown. Maybe there wasn't a thorough enough review. Now, in Pat Fitzgerald's statement that he released late last night, Jay, he said that they had mutually agreed to this punishment on Friday. So there had been some communication between Fitzgerald's camp and Schill. But everything else you said is true, nor did he attend the team meeting last night. I'm not sure if he's in town. I assume he is, but he was certainly not in the football building on Monday night as the team was receiving this news. So this is the way this has gone down, really, from start to finish, certainly casts some serious questions on Michael Schill, his leadership, and also the strategy that Northwestern took. They put this out on a Friday at a relatively light time of year. A lot of people are on vacation. It kind of goes away. Then it bubbles up on Saturday, certainly with the details.
Freddie, I'm not saying that there couldn't be a lack of communication, because even though I think the chances are slim, there could be. That is a reality.
Right.
But I there's a tendency for me not to believe that in a situation like this, there would be oversight that would make be around these type of details, right?
Yeah, there should be.
That's common sense.
There's plenty of oversight that was going on with Northwestern football involving hazing a player. So that all can be true when it comes to where we are now with Northwestern football. Adam Rittenberg, ESPN senior writer for college football. Hit him on Twitter at ESPN Rittenberg, joining Freddie Coleman and Jay Williams on ESPN Radio. So, Adam, the easy question is, now what for Northwestern football? What is your answer?
Well, yeah, it is an easy question, but it's a difficult answer because of the timing of this. I think it's more likely than not that Northwestern will go through the 2023 season with an interim head coach, David Braun, who's a defensive coordinator who was brought in this offseason. So real no long-term connection to the program or any of these incidents over the years. You know, he's now serving essentially as acting head coach, and I think is likely to be named the interim head coach here over the next few days. But you know, now they have to figure out where do you go from here. I mean, the program had not performed on the field well, but graduated their players, seemingly had a healthy culture, had a obvious face of the program and Pat Fitzgerald, who turned down other college jobs, had turned down NFL interest. And so this is a very important moment for the athletic director Derek Gragg and the university to support these players and ultimately get it right, because this program is in a very, very delicate spot right now, only a few weeks away from preseason practice in the 2023 season. But I would be surprised if they tried to bring in somebody from the outside to oversee the team this year. I think they'll do a full coaching search to get ready for the 2024 season.
Hey, Adam, not only is the university in a very delicate situation, I mean, but the Big Ten Conference overall, if you're Jim Delaney, you're a commissioner, I mean, they're in a delicate situation here. I mean, think about the amount of scandals or wrongdoings that have occurred since the year 2011. I mean, I was trying to go back and count. I counted 16. I mean, go all the way back to Jerry Sandusky. What kind of stain does this leave on the legacy of Northwestern, who has always had the most prestigious brand?
Yeah, it's certainly one of them. You know, Northwestern's had some issues in the past. They had some gambling issues in the 90s, but this is certainly, you know, the most stunning situation that they've had to deal with, especially because of who was the head coach and how it transpired. What Pat Fitzgerald has meant, he was one of the faces of the 1995 Rose Bowl team that completely changed the trajectory of that program and helped them become a Big Ten champion and respectable over the last 25 years or so. And your point about the Big Ten is valid as well. It's a league that takes a lot of pride in its academic reputation in trying to do things the right way. But you look at Penn State, you look at Michigan State, there's been a number of high-profile, damaging, and embarrassing incidents that have happened for this league. So certainly something that I'm sure folks around the conference are concerned about, with this being the latest.
Urban Meyer, you know, over at Ohio State, DJ Durkin over at Maryland.
Keep going.
A lot of situations that have occurred.
Yeah, and this is just the latest involving that regarding the Big Ten. Adam, great stuff, my man. Great stuff with the reporting on this Northwestern situation. You take care and be well.
Thanks, Adam.
Hey, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Adam Rittenberg, ESPN college football reporter, joining us here. He's been all over the Northwestern story. He's Jay Williams and Freddie Coleman on ESPN Radio and ESPNU. You can weigh in anytime you want about this on Twitter at @RealJayWilliams and at Coleman ESPN. And the phone number as well at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Jay mentioned a lot of schools and a lot of programs been in trouble in the Big Ten. Waiting till you hear the ones that made that list that you may not have known of. We'll do that next on ESPN Radio.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Electric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
This is ESPN Radio.
The Big Ten is really glad that money is undefeated, because more than ever before, that made be more than enough to erase the stain that conference has been a part of, even before the Northwestern football situation, the ugliness, and the allegations. He is Jay Williams and Freddie Coleman. Thanks for joining us here on ESPN Radio this morning, as well as the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80. And don't forget about us by telling your smart speaker to play ESPN Radio. You listed a couple of things. We had the terrific Adam Rittenberg, who's been all over the Northwestern story as an ESPN senior writer for college football. Hit him on Twitter at ESPN Rittenberg. Before the Northwestern situation became public, the Big Ten, they've run afoul of a lot of things on and off football fields and basketball courts in the last 15 to 20 years.
Well, it also leads to, as my thoughts on, you know, Michael Schill, the president of Northwestern, and, you know, Coach Fitzgerald, that there's no margin for error in the Big Ten, right? And you pleading ignorance in a conference that has lived after scandal after scandal, you can't do that. So let's just go through a list of wrongdoings that have occurred since 2011. So you have the Iowa situation with 13 football players that were hospitalized. 2011, Ohio State, Jim Tressel resigns for lying to the NCAA, Tattoo Gate. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
That scandal. 2011, Penn State, Jerry Sandusky, right? We all know about how big that was. 2012, Nebraska, extra benefits violations, textbooks. 14, Ohio State again, 6 lacrosse players hospitalized. 14 again, Ohio State, 1 track and field member hospitalized. 14, Michigan, QB Shane Morris concussed, reinserted into the game during that game. 15, Illinois, Tim Beckman fired for influencing medical injury reports. 15, Rutgers, Kyle Flood fired for influencing player academic status. 16, Indiana, Kevin Wilson resigns for alleged abusing players. 17, Minnesota, Tracy Clays fired for standing by boycotting players. That's different. 2017, Michigan State, Larry Nassar. Okay?
Oh, boy.
2018, Nebraska, 2 football players hospitalized. 18, Ohio State, Richard Strauss, scandal breaks under investigation. 2018, Ohio State, Urban Meyer, that situation. And then 2018, player dies, DJ Durkin, placed on leave, under investigation.
All in the Big Ten.
All in the Big Ten. That was a laundry list of things occurring. If you're Jim Delaney, the commissioner, you have to be waking up to all this news at Northwestern saying, what the hell is going on? Like, we're trying to expand the conference. We have a lot of talk. And by the way, all these individuals have been removed. Mm-hmm. So understanding that's happening to Coach Fitzgerald, and there's a lawsuit, because it leads into the question, though, that how do you, even though he's accountable, how do you prove him knowing that these things occurred? Because he could make the case legally, Freddie.
And he will.
Well, I've seen clapping. I thought it was just a thing that players do to make fun. You know, I never knew what it entailed. He can play coy to a lot of these things. I wonder how you actually prove it, because he was just starting 2 years of his 10-year deal for $57 million.
Okay, here's the counter, not from me.
No, we're talking through it live in person.
Here's the counter from Pat Fitzgerald. He put out a statement. I had the privilege of serving as the head football coach at Northwestern University for the past 17 years. As a former Wildcat player who played a part in the remarkable transformation of our program, it was a tremendous honor to have the opportunity to lead the team. I take great pride in the achievements we accomplished during my tenure, both on and off the field. I dedicated myself wholeheartedly to nurturing our players, not only as athletes, but also as exemplary students and members of the community. Our program instilled in young men the qualities to become outstanding husbands, fathers, and valuable contributors to society. The overwhelming majority of the players we coach, 99% to be precise, have provided positive feedback that affirms our efforts. Attorney Maggie Hickey conducted a thorough investigation spanning several months into the allegations that led to my termination. Her investigation reaffirmed what I've always maintained, that I had no knowledge whatsoever of any form of hazing within the Northwestern football program. Given this unexpected turn of events, I've entrusted my agent Brian Harlan and legal counsel Dan Webb from Winston & Strawn LLP to take the necessary steps to protect my rights in accordance with the law, end quote. Pat Fitzgerald with that statement is clearly let everybody know that no matter what happens, I'm getting my pound of flesh. That's where he is right now. Oh, he sugarcoated by saying, you know, members of society, I've been proudly part of Northwestern football. Not one time did he mention any admission of guilt in that statement. He's determined to get his pound of flesh at the expense of Northwestern. The problem with that statement is there are too many people out there that said you got enough a pound of flesh at the expense of people that you were supposed to guide and protect. And it took a daily Northwestern to do something that you and your players didn't do. And that's to protect the players in the team and not bullying them. And when it comes to legalities, he made sure that legally you couldn't dissect anything in that statement that could be used against him in the court of law.
So you're wondering, I mean, you fire for due cause, right? But like, do you still owe him the full amount of payment? Right?
That's what he's going after.
The morality of it, you're absolutely right. We're right. We agree on that. Just because you didn't know doesn't mean that you should didn't know, right?
Right.
You should not know. You should have known. That's one aspect, right? Which allows you to say, hey, leave of absence, no longer need it here job-wise. But then it leads into the legality of the situation that states, if you can't prove that he didn't know or that he did know, what's the case? That's what makes it tough.
That's why he returned an attorney to make sure that he can handle those kind of things. Jay Williams, Freddie Coleman together on ESPN Radio and ESPNU. But if you're Tony Petitti, who was named the Big Ten commissioner in April of this year, you want to try to put this in the past as quickly as you possibly can, because you got a brand new contract out there when it comes to Big Ten athletics that you don't want anything placing a black mark next to that money, where you don't want people coming after you. But he also knows this, and Jay, you know this too. You play big-time basketball at Duke. You play in the NBA. Money can make a lot of things go away.
Winning can make a lot of things go away as well.
Yeah, you know, exactly, including when people have amnesia about certain things that have gone on at programs. The more you're able to generate heat and money, the more you can put that kind of thing, those kind of things in your rearview mirror. If I'm Tony Petitti, the new Big Ten commissioner, that's what I'm counting on. As bad as this is, we know that something else will come up that'll take over that news cycle. It doesn't obscure the fact that there are players out there that went through this allegedly, and it came to light in the Daily Northwestern, which means that, and this is just me spitballing, when it's all said and done, Pat Fitzgerald's not going to pay a heavy price for this. Yeah, he lost his job, but he's going to get a lot of money. And I guarantee you he'll resurface somewhere else. But the lives of those kids that went through this are going to be affected for the rest of their lives.
But see, Freddie, this is what I have a hard time. I mean, look, a court of law will ultimately determine on what happens as it relates to a payout, if he receives his full or not. But there are so many people within programs. And we had, for having 14 or 15 basketball players, we had so many people around us, from student managers to, you know, tutors, to people that helped us on the road, to people even around campus. Everybody knew our stories or what was going on. I find it hard to believe that throughout this entire tenure, that never came up one time.
Yeah, I'm not buying it either.
Especially to multiple people out here that have made comments about it over the last several days about feeling extremely uncomfortable with it. Like, for it not to be breached one time. Word travels so quickly, and just understanding how these head coaches navigate and the autonomy they have with all the people that work beneath them, because they understand it's one strike and you could be out.
Yeah. I just wonder how you live with yourself if you're those players that did that to another teammate, or if you're a coach or administrator that got wind of this and did nothing. I wonder, how can you live with yourself? How can you live when you violated somebody allegedly?
I'm not saying anything about the kids. Like, yeah. I'm not absolving them at all.
No, I'm
like,
not.
They're young adults. Like, they're not kids.
Yeah. Okay, like, young adults. That's fine.
A lot of silliness and dumb things happen.
But this is beyond that.
I agree with you. It's not acceptable. I'm not saying it's acceptable, nor am I condoning it. I'm just, as a college kid, we've seen a lot of crazy things that have occurred.
Yeah.
20 years ago, even today, it's still a thing.
Yeah. It shouldn't be hard to do the right thing, but more than ever before, sometimes it's even harder when you got peer pressure and bullying that seems to be in many, many different shapes and many, many different forms. Northwestern football, that locker room situation notwithstanding.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is ESPN Radio.
Always appreciate you joining us here this morning on ESPN Radio. Jay Williams, Freddie Coleman together, presented by Progressive Insurance. Thanks for joining us on the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and don't forget about us on ESPNU. By the way, the USTA, the United States Tennis Association Foundation, the national charitable arm of the USTA, utilizes the powerful combination of tennis and education to enhance the lives of under-resourced youth through its support of the National Junior Tennis and Learning Network. By the way, USTA Foundation Chairperson Chris Everett was named a Stuart Scott Inspire Award honoree in 2022 for work to break down barriers for undeserved youth to gain access to the game of tennis. Let's bring in Lou Shear. Does a great job as a CEO and executive director of the United States Tennis Association. Lou, what does it mean to not only your sport, but also to the USTA to have the legendary Chris Everett named a Stuart Scott Inspire Award honoree?
Yeah, look, thanks for having me on this morning. It's an incredible event for us, outcome for us to have Chrissy recognized for all of the work. She gets so much attention for her playing career. She's an amazing broadcaster, but she has had a profound impact through our foundation on the lives of hundreds of thousands of kids across America. And she is so passionate about the work that the foundation does. And we're inspired by her energy, that same competitive spirit that led her to such great success on the court, I think inspires us every day to try to improve the lives of kids across the country.
Lou, obviously we're seeing a lot of the older stars kind of make their way out of tennis, and we're seeing an influx of new young stars in the game, which is extremely exciting. What do you think that transition has done for the sport overall? Because I see the attendance numbers and growth of the sport up drastically from where it was over the last several years.
Yeah, you know, Jay, terrific question. And I think, you know, in almost every sport, great stars tend to cycle through. Michael Jordan in basketball, transitioning to LeBron. We've had three on the men's side, three incredible champions in Roger Federer, Rafa Nadal, Novak Djokovic, maybe three of the best of all time competing against one another and doing historic things. On the women's side, certainly you've had Serena Williams, maybe the greatest of all time in our sport. But we saw last year at the U.S. Open unbelievable excitement with the transition to great new personalities, whether that be Francis Tiafoe, yep, Carlos Alcaraz, Coco Gauff. Our fans are energized about some of these great new players that are coming up. And we know the future is bright and will continue to be bright. And this group will have amazing success. And then there will be another crop of incredible young players coming up right behind them. The sport tends to, as all sports do, tends to replenish itself with stars.
CEO and Executive Director of the United States Tennis Association, Lou Shear, joining Freddie Coleman and Jay Williams on ESPN Radio. And one of those guys is Christopher Eubanks. First time playing in Wimbledon, he's reached the quarterfinals of that Grand Slam tournament. He's 27 years of age. I don't know what's better with Christopher Eubanks, his play on the court or his analysis when he's joined them in studio. What has it been like, Lou, to see him on this stage doing it not only on the court, but then being able to have a conversation about that with ESPN and doing it very, very well on both of those entities?
Look, Chris's tournament has been extraordinary. And here's a guy that was a two-time NCAA champion, turned pro in 2017, and has just been working and working and working at his craft. And now to see such great results and to see him being recognized not only as an incredible talent, but also as a really compelling, fun personality for fans. I actually believe if he had lost early, the intention was for him to do some broadcasting with your colleagues at ESPN. We're much more excited to have him on the court. But he's extraordinary and a testament to hard work and continuing. In tennis, we're seeing, as you know, with the great champions, players being able to prolong their careers, stay in the game longer. Some of the great champions that we think of from the past, whether that be Bjorn Borg, John McEnroe, their careers at 25, 26 were coming to conclusion.
Lou, you know, obviously we have a lot. You may mention of some of the great women, young players that we have in the game, Coco Gauff, to make mention of some. I am curious, you know, obviously watching Serena, how she's built out her business profile, having a pretty large VC. What is your thinking around how to continue to keep some of these legendary players who are now retiring still involved at a very high level to usher in this new generation to kind of keep that transitional process going?
You know, I think here in the U.S., and I can't really speak for other nations quite so well, but here in the U.S., our player development organization that works with elite juniors and professionals who are on tour at this current time has done a great job engaging past players to work with, up-and-coming players. And you don't necessarily see that on screen at major events and things like that. But here at our national campus in Orlando, you'll see that at smaller tournaments where they've reached out to many of the top players to come in and counsel some of the younger players that are going up. And thankfully, they tend to be very generous with their time and willing to participate in that way. Others, you know, we talked about Chrissy. Serena does a lot of philanthropic things. Venus as well. We see other players. Andre Agassi would be another great example of someone who has done incredible things post-career to impact lives of kids and try to improve the quality of life in this country. We're very fortunate that players tend to want to give back and are able to do so.
Who does more when it comes to the McEnroes? Because it seems like it's a 50-50 race, Lou, when it comes to Patrick McEnroe and John McEnroe, who've been really instrumental in the USTA. What is it like having both of those men who are always going to be committed to the cause because they want to see more for U.S. tennis and tennis in general, and they're willing to donate so much of their time to making that happen?
You know, I think if you ask them, you might get two different answers depending on which one you ask, but we're incredibly fortunate to be able to tap into to Patrick and John. They do great work, certainly on air, but they're also very generous with their time working with young players, both at their academy in New York and providing support to us. Patrick was a colleague of mine here a number of years ago, leading our player development organization. Many of the players, in fact, Chris Eubanks is probably part of a crop that Patrick was involved in when he was 14 or 15 years old. They're terrific, but they're not alone. We've got a lot of players, right up to Billie Jean King, who generously gives a lot of her time to work with kids. And all of them are very supportive of the work that our foundation does. I know we're talking about Chrissy's efforts with the USGA Foundation. We're supporting 270 chapters around the country, hundreds of thousands of kids. We've been able to award grants in excess of $65 million, grants and scholarships to support kids and use tennis as a way to teach broader life skills. It's the legacy that Arthur Ashe, talk about players who have given back. Arthur Ashe initiated with the National Junior Tennis and Learning Network, and we're just so privileged to be able to keep that flame burning and support kids across America who might want to be inspired to play, and if they're not, to use tennis as a way to provide safe environment and opportunities to just learn broader life skills.
Yeah, and especially Christopher Eubanks making the quarterfinals of Wimbledon on the 40th anniversary of the time when Arthur Ashe won the Wimbledon championship back in 1975. Hey, Lou, great stuff, my friend. Keep up the great work, and thanks for joining us this morning on ESPN Radio and ESPNU.
Thanks, Lou.
Thanks to you both.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is ESPN Radio. From the top five NFL quarterbacks.
Touchdown, Jalen Hurts.
R-E-L-A-X.
To the top five NFL fan bases. We're ranking the top of everything in the NFL. This is ESPN Radio's Rank 'Em. The top five overall players.
He's Jay Wins. I'm Freddie Coleman, together on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80 ESPNU. Now back at 6:45 Eastern Time, give or take a lie or two, Jay Will gave his top five players in the National Football League for those who weren't here.
I just want you to know Jeff Darlington agreed
with all five of my
top five players.
ESPN
and then you started
reporter.
Saying to me every time we're off air, it's my turn, damn it. It's my turn. When will I get a chance to go? Well, now it's your go, Freddie.
You're making me sound like a whiny old man.
Well,
I wasn't whiny. I may be cranky. I may be curmudgeonly, but I'm not whiny.
There you go. T-Show's new word. Yeah.
We're here to help. The more you know. Anyway, what was your top five?
So I had Aaron Donald at number five.
Yeah.
Justin Jefferson, number four. Nick Bosa, number three. Joe Burrow, number two.
Right.
And King Mahomes,
yes,
number three.
All right. So
number let's give
one.
Him a new nickname. It's, you know,
King Mahomes? He is the king of the hill. That works.
No?
King of the hill?
I mean,
yeah, absolutely. King Mahomes. I'm with that.
It's already been done.
King James? No. Nah, King James, King Mahomes.
King Henry. He can be king of the hill. Yeah, I'll say king of the hill.
Is he really the king anymore? I mean,
he can be my goat.
Goat now.
Because then there's like Lego.
Could be low hanging fruit there.
I'm still cool with Ferrari Pat.
That works too. Of course you are, because it got your name. So here's my top five.
Bingo.
This guy is selfish.
Number five.
I got Myles Garrett of the Cleveland Browns. I think that guy is going to be continue to be a superstar in the National Football League. Pound for pound, he is hard to deal with. He can stop the run. He can get after the quarterback. Don't punish him because the Cleveland Browns have not been winning. It's not his fault. It is not his problem. He continues to go out there, and there are plenty of times where he's not just the best defensive player in the field. He's the best player in the field, despite the team that he plays for. I got Myles Garrett at number five.
Number four.
I got Tyreek Hill of the Miami Dolphins. Man, anytime he's around on that list, he gets the ball in his hands, and he is just flat-out special. He can take what I call those long shorties. You give him something short, and it becomes a long play. Tyreek Hill is better than that anybody in the National Football League, believe me. Tua Tagovailoa wants to get healthy, not because he knows he can play quarterback, but he gets to throw to that guy who right now, for my money, pound for pound, may be the best wide receiver in the NFL. I got Tyreek Hill at number four.
I have so many follow-up questions on long shorties, but I'll keep that for after. Segment.
I'm glad. I can't wait to hear the AYO indeed. What's next?
Number three.
He's still pound for pound one of the best players in the NFL. It's Aaron Donald of the Los Angeles Rams, and I know he's slowed down, but when you're great, 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 you can still be great, 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 and still be a dominant player when it comes to Aaron Donald. And believe me, whatever whispers he's heard, what could be his final year in the NFL, he's not going to go out with a whimper. He's going to go out with a bang. He is still pound for pound one of the best players in the league. I got Aaron Donald at number three.
Number two.
This guy's the best defensive player in the NFL.
Not Allen Yates number two, right?
Not Allen Yates number two. No, not that number two.
Number two.
Not the dog of Allen Yates being number two, but that's a dog at number two known as Nick Bosa of the San Francisco 49ers. And even when he's injured, he scares you to death. He just never stops. He's got a relentless motor. He can make great sacks early. He can get you late. He gets you in the middle. He's an all-time guy at this rate if he keeps this up. I don't know what's in the water, the Bosa family, between him and Joey Bosa. His brother plays Los Angeles Chargers. Mm-hmm. But whatever they drink, I want some of it as much as possible. I got Nick Bosa at number two.
Number one.
There's no doubt. If it wasn't proven before, that playoff run last year solidifies it. He is the king of the hill in the National Football League when it comes to Patrick Mahomes. It's one thing to win a championship, to win your second championship. It's another thing to literally do that on one leg. When many people said, man, what is that going to look like?
I know about that life.
If anybody would know, no question about that, it would be you being a one-legged bandit, beating Kansas City, having Kansas City beat Cincinnati at home, and then that run for the ages in that fourth quarter on that touchdown, that leading drive to win the game for the Chiefs against the Philadelphia Eagles. There's no doubt, and Jay, you made the point, we can start having that conversation, and he keeps this up. He's going to be on that list where you're going to talk about Tom Brady and John Elway and Joe Montana. Patrick Mahomes keeps getting closer and closer to those three guys among the best of the best. He's the king of the hill in the NFL.
That's
my top five list.
I got no problem with the list. I think Twitter is starting to react a little bit towards it.
Look out.
We have one guy, I might butcher this, at J. Ruskov Savage. I don't even know how to say that.
What?
That's okay. I don't blame Jay
for that.
How
would you say it? How would you say it?
Let me see it.
It's right there at the top.
At the top?
Say it.
Let me see.
Say it out loud.
It says,
don't think
Joseph Ruskavage.
Damn, you're good.
Thank you.
All right.
8 years of college at Manchester University, Pennsylvania. Yep.
If Lane Johnson made Nick Bosa disappear in the playoffs, shouldn't he be top five?
No. Well, Lane Johnson, for my money, is the best offensive lineman in the National Football League. I know people want to say it's Quentin Nelson, Indianapolis Colts, or Zach Martin of the Dallas Cowboys. For my money, Lane Johnson, pound for pound, is the best lineman in the National Football League. But sometimes you just get got, because I guarantee you we're not having this conversation if Nick Bosa was able to do that.
1,000%.
And what helps Lane Johnson is that the ability to run the football and that he can leverage all people. So I'm not going to put him above Nick Bosa.
Here's something that's so scary.
What's that?
About the talent of Kansas City.
Okay.
One could make the case that you could have three players on Kansas City all be in the top five.
Travis Kelce, a tight end.
Chris Jones.
And Chris Jones, defensive tackle. He doesn't get enough
and
credit.
And Patrick Mahomes.
Yep,
because you could make the case
that's very true.
Travis Kelce, Chris Jones, and Patrick Mahomes. Yeah. They're all in the top five. You could. I'm not saying it's correct, but it would be an arguable case.
Yeah, because I had Kelce at number six, because I think at the rate he's going to be a top two tight end of all time. He's going to be in that Rob Gronkowski category. Another guy doesn't get enough credit because his injuries took him away is Kellen Winslow, the San Diego Chargers.
Mm.
Had he not had that torn ACL that took away his career, we're talking about that guy being maybe the greatest tight end of all time above Mike Ditka and people like that. But Travis Kelce is no joke.
Another one for you, Micah Parsons. Where are we going to have him? Is he right outside the top five waiting to crack in?
He's top 10 material.
Top 10 material,
for sure. Top 10 material, yeah. I'll take both of the Bosas over him. I think both of those guys are tremendous. But that line is very, very thin between Micah Parsons and those guys. And now he's going to be strictly a pass rusher.
It's scary.
Look out.
It's scary. Him. And last one, I might kind of float around top 10, Josh Jacobs. I think Josh Jacobs has had a tremendous, like, he's like sleeper, like waiting to pierce in that five conversation if he has another breakout season again.
Josh Jacobs pays the price of having a team not winning.
That's exactly the problem.
When it comes to Las Vegas Raiders, because
the numbers are stupid.
This is not a run he can't make.
No.
Short, long, intermediate. That's a bad mother. Shut your mouth. Playing for the Las Vegas Raiders.
What does long shorties mean?
I will explain
I need answers.
We'll have answers to that. And are we going to have an answer later than sooner when it comes to Miami Heat getting Damian Lillard? That's next.
This is ESPN Radio. More next.